The audible of the best in Bitcoin. This is the Cryptoconomy. Welcome back to the Cryptoconomy, everybody. I am Guy Swan. What the hell is happening in the financial markets right now? This last week is practically a live demonstration of why you should always DCA your Bitcoin buying. And a thank you to Swan Bitcoin for sponsoring the show. It really could not be more relevant at this very moment. It's practically destiny that they are going live in a matter of days, while their strategy is basically being proven as the only sensible option in a very volatile market. Trying to time the market will get you destroyed. And it will be super stressful at the same time. So if you buy and stack at regular intervals, you don't miss the low, and you're always there for when Bitcoin rises. Swan Bitcoin is how you do that. We are diving into the financial markets today. Caitlin Long, I'm sure most of you saw it, but she's a fellow Bitcoin warrior, if you do not know, from the great state of Wyoming. And she's super knowledgeable and experienced in kind of the nitty gritty of finance. She started Avanti, I believe it is. I didn't even double check. It's a bank and financial services for everything around Bitcoin and crypto and stuff. So there's a lot of exciting stuff going over there. So she's definitely a key person to be following if you are not. But she just dropped an excellent thread on sort of the macro story on what's happening. Let's go ahead and jump into this Twitter thread, and then we will talk and expand on all of this and get Guy's take afterward. So let's jump in. Caitlin Long. How to understand what's going on in the financial markets. The Western world built up a debt bubble of stunning proportions over the past roughly 50 years. It's deflating now, just as it tried to do in 2008, 2001, 1997, 1994, 1987, 1981, and 1974. Each time, though, there was enough balance sheet capacity to reinflate the system by pumping more debt into it. In other words, assets still existed that hadn't yet been encumbered by debt, directly or indirectly, meaning the countries were solvent. That's why their fiat currencies had value. Assets were still available that lenders didn't yet have a claim upon. In other words, assets not yet mortgaged. Important to understand that when debt expands, liquidity grows, and mostly it just pushes up financial asset prices for various reasons. The reverse is also true. Debt has grown for 50 consecutive years, but peppered by deleveraging periods when the total debt outstanding actually shrinks, for example, 2008 and now. Typically, mainstream economists call for central banks and governments to offset that credit contraction by creating new debt, monetary and fiscal stimulus, to fill the hole. What they're really doing is backfilling for shrinking debt by creating new public sector debt in an attempt to counter the financial asset price correction that inevitably accompanies a credit contraction, aka debt deflation. That's what we're seeing now. The shrinking debt is caused by capital destruction, where capital was consumed by businesses that earned a return less than the cost of the capital. Entire industries have done that. Housing going into 2008, shale producers going into 2020, etc. And in these debt deflations, the magnitude of the capital destruction that was building all along is revealed. It just wasn't obvious because new debt injections were able to paper over it. Why wasn't it evident as it was building? Because interest rates are mispriced, artificially low. And this is why you see entire industries making the exact same bad business decisions at exactly the same time. Example, let's say a business invests in a project expected to return 10% and has a weighted average cost of capital of 8%. No problem. It would earn real economic value of 2% times the capital invested. But what if the weighted average cost of capital were really 12% instead of 8%? Recall that the expected return was only 10%, which thus means the project destroyed capital, 2% times the capital invested. The project never should have been pursued. How did the business make such a bad mistake? Because markets misled it. Because markets mispriced its cost of borrowing. How? Because interest rates were held artificially low by central bank policy trying to rev up the economy. So what they thought was a good project turned out to be bad. Every single company in the industry invested badly at the same time. Every single competitor made the exact same mistake in the same direction. They weren't idiots. Their mistake was believing the flow of artificially cheap money would last. And why not? It lasted for almost 50 years. Every time trouble came, they were bailed out by government action, either monetary or fiscal stimulus, actually both in recent crises. But the problem is the magnitude of such stimulus needed to revive the system keeps growing, since the amplitude of crises keeps growing. Markets have now shrugged off massive stimulus of both types, and this time, the hole that the Fed and the government are trying to backfill is much bigger than in 2008. Why? Because debt ballooned since then, so this credit contraction is much bigger. For perspective, debt in U.S. non-financial sectors, household, business, government, went up 10% in the past 2 years. Yep, total debt shot up a whopping 10% in the U.S. just in the past 2 years. That's $83.3 trillion of total debt in the U.S. non-financial sectors at year-end 2019, up from $75.8 trillion in 2017. I exclude financial debt because that's mostly just a pass-through to non-financial sectors. Here's the data. I've been tracking it ever since 2008. That's when I learned how the U.S. economy had been hollowed out by decades of bad economic decisions by both political parties. The U.S. was consuming more than we produced and borrowing to do it. So, to put this week's multi-trillion dollar monetary and fiscal stimulus into perspective, how much of that $7.5 trillion of new debt in just 2 years do you think produced a real economic return? Probably not much. Probably most of it is destroyed capital. Ponder whether all the corporate debt issued to finance stock buybacks at much higher stock prices generated a real return. Or the massive misallocation of capital in the energy industry. This is why the Fed's bazooka $1.5 trillion stimulus, stunningly large, hasn't worked and is just pushing on a string. Because the debt bubble is even more staggering in size. One of my hero analysts, Doug Noland, predicted last fall that the Fed's balance sheet would swell from $4 trillion to $10 trillion in the next financial crisis. Well, it's here. At the time I tweeted, his estimate was too low, and I hope you see why now. Because writing off just the last 2 years of bad debt alone would need a $10 trillion Fed balance sheet to fill the hole. What does this mean? Strap in for some serious volatility. We ain't seen nothing yet. I've read a lot of history about what happens when credit systems die. The volatility is staggering. The 5% swings in both directions we're seeing now is nothing. Try 20%. In one example, near the end, the swings were 50%. Yes, 50% intraday swings up and down. Will that happen here? Don't know. But don't be surprised if yes. But realize, life doesn't end in these situations, which are restructurings during which the control of the factors of production moves from weak hands to strong hands, from the hands of destroyers of capital to the hands of producers of capital. That's a necessary outcome. Sounds scary, and it is. I'm not saying this is the end of the credit system, just laying out that possibility. The cost of reinflating the system once again is a lot more than $10 trillion of stimulus this time, in my honest opinion. And even if it works, the cost will only be bigger next time. Tomorrow, I'll record a podcast with Anthony Papliano and we'll discuss solutions. Thank goodness alternative systems for storing your wealth exist. If you're willing to read history to understand all this and take time to educate yourself about the alternatives, you'll feel better. These situations favor those who embrace change and ignore the advice of those stuck in the old paradigm. Huge opportunities are already opening up. Take care of your loved ones and neighbors, and stay safe out there, folks. All right, and again, that was Caitlin Long, an excellent Twitter thread, and just an awesome breakdown of the kind of underlying truth of the imbalance that you don't see, or you just don't get from the mainstream. Like, the perspective of what is real isn't even there. It's all what do the numbers say, and all the numbers are manipulated because none of the prices are actually telling us the truth. And it means that underlying truth is that we have been endlessly investing all at the same time into products and projects and industries that are destroying value instead of creating it. It's so important to frame these things in real terms and not nominal terms, not in like just the flat numbers. It's like trying to measure your house when your measuring stick is changing in length, like the actual measurement, like how long a foot is or an inch is, isn't being consistent. So if you're just looking at how many inches your house is, you might have no idea whether your house got bigger or smaller, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, she said one of the most important things she said in this thread that I think is pertinent, and it's the reason we are all here, is that, you know, thank God we have an alternative to this system, that like Bitcoin, we have a true sound monetary asset that is not exposed to all of this, that the asset itself cannot be leveraged. And that's what we've seen everywhere. We're just so over leveraged, like everything, like she said, everything has been mortgaged. And when we found that we were over mortgaged in the last cycle, well, we were like, all right, so what is left to be mortgaged? And we kept mortgaging things. And now in this last bubble, we've had a bubble that has been exclusive to financial instruments, to derivatives, to stocks and all of these things. Why? Because we're now leveraging, we're now mortgaging our previous mortgages, literally. So it's almost, you know, like serendipitous that Bitcoin has been born in the midst of all of this. And, you know, despite the fact that leveraging has spilled over into the Bitcoin space, we don't have any circuit breakers. You know, there's no repo market to lend fake coins when, you know, people have positioned themselves stupidly. There are no bailouts here. Our corrections are far more likely to be sharp and short-lived. That is why you should dollar cost average. If you're stacking sats through all of this, you don't have to worry about the daily price, and you catch it when things fall. And Swan Bitcoin is the simplest way to do that. The strategy through this is produce more than you consume, put the extra value into Bitcoin every day, every week, every paycheck, whatever works best for you. Our economy needs production and savings to actually get out of this, and it needs strong hands, people who know what to be investing in. And I think we have that. I think we are part of that alternative system that is going to be there to facilitate the solution to this problem, hopefully to the degree of an immunity indefinitely. And you know, that's what we need. And it's also important to support good businesses, ones that have long-term strategies, like just like Swan Bitcoin. So that's like part ad for Swan Bitcoin, part call to how to weather the crazy financial storm we got going on here. And of course, not have to be day and night focused on the volatility, because there will be volatility here. And actually, one of the recent reads we did from Al Jazeera by, Timur Azari on Al Jazeera, and it was titled Distrust in the Lebanese Banks Spurs a Bitcoin Boom. And it was read 360 if you haven't heard it. One of the sections in there, which I just love, and I'm probably going to be using this a lot, is that Bitcoin is a volatile currency for volatile times. And that's one thing that, it's funny, the lack of volatility is a large part of the problem. It's actually a consequence of what Caitlin Long is explaining here, is that we've not been able to correctly price things. The lack of volatility is actually just a facade. There has been a lot of volatility and a lot of loss in the real value and the real production of the economy, but it's been papered over with just fake money. It's been the volatility in the size of our measuring stick has been papered over using the numbers on the actual measuring stick itself. They just keep manipulating prices to make it appear as if there are no swings, as if we're not destroying value. And it's completely destroying the mechanism of the price system to allocate resources correctly sustainably. A great one to read on this that I just recommend endlessly is The Use of Knowledge in Society by Hayek. It's reads 250 and 251. I'll link to that and Timora's article in the show notes. So if you want to check those out, definitely do. But The Use of Knowledge in Society is an excellent piece breaking down the concept of the pricing system, how it works, like how much information it's actually allocating for, and like really digging into the thought experiment of what money does in the society and why prices are not arbitrary. So as soon as you have, like, we know, it's ridiculous the kind of contradiction, the logical contradiction that exists in the financial markets and exists in the whole central banking and government policies, that we know price controls don't work. They just don't. Like, you ask any mainstream economists and most will succumb. They'll be like, okay, well, yeah, like, obviously price controls don't work, but, and then they'll try to explain it away. The simple fact is it doesn't. It just creates misallocation of resources. It indicates, or not indicates, because the price is there to transmit information. It's there to tell us something useful. And as soon as you put a price control on something or you manipulate the price of something, you just destroy what it's trying to tell you. It's like changing the definition of negative terms so that they sound positive. But what's actually being said, it's like saying, you know, I hate you. And then it was like, oh, well, just look it up in the dictionary. Hate means love now. When the reality is that, like, it's just not telling us the truth anymore. But that's a great piece that really digs into the concept and expands on it in a lot of different ways. And I highly, highly recommend it. It's so much fun. I love that. I love that concept. And it's super critical to understanding what Caitlin is explaining in this thread, is exactly how and why we have found ourselves in such an unbelievably massive systemic imbalance. And at the heart of it all is the manipulation of interest rates. It's the manipulation of how much capital there is to actually loan out, like real capital versus fake capital, versus a check that pretends there was actually some sort of production there to back it. And she even starts this thing kind of going into, like, just kind of showing how long we have been pumping this up. We have been trying to mortgage the next thing, the next supply that we could find anywhere, one more time to continue this on. Like, she lists all these that we've inflated our way out of, and the government has always either, you know, lowered interest rates, done a bailout, done some sort of stimulus, like almost every single time. Like, the government has done nothing but go worse and worse into debt. And the full debt The numbers that she was talking about, how like just in 2 years, we've increased 10% total debt. Like, this has been going on for 50 years. This has been a never-ending, consistent trend where the way out of the previous attempt at a correction was to make the imbalance worse. There's only so far that that goes. It's to suggest that the imbalance never be needs to be corrected, and that's ridiculous. Obviously, we're going to, the pressure is just going to build worse and worse and worse. And this, you know, she details it's 1974, 81, 87, 94, 97, 2001, 2008, and now 2020. And granted, it's kind of a shock that we got out of the 2008 without a complete system crash. I really kind of thought it was coming back then, but I knew a whole lot less than I know now. But at the same time, I still don't know. Like, it's all, they could prop it up, but it's going to take a mountain of money. Just like she says, just the gap alone for the last 2 years brings us to $10 trillion easily. And I think she's right. I think that's an underestimate. It will take way more than that to basically paper over our continued mistakes, our continuation of all of these projects, all of these industries, all of these companies that are actually destroying value, that are taking real resources. This is why every single time there's a fiscal stimulus, every time that there's lending out new money to pay for the previous loan, what you have is you have asset price inflation, and everyone with savings, that value actually has to come from somewhere. What's happening is that the real productive chains of the economy, the real wages, aren't meeting the amount of capital that's flowing into, they're funding this. Like, your work, your value that you actually produce is being confiscated from you. Everyone who has any sort of savings is subsidizing, they don't know it, but they are subsidizing everyone who has debts. That's how it can look like stock market is at, you know, record highs, but then somehow feel, and certainly be the case, that the middle class is disappearing, that the impoverished are becoming more poor, they're becoming poorer, and the wealthy, the Cantillon effect is in full swing. The banks, the financial markets are soaking up assets. If you go to the WTF happened in 1971, you'll notice from 71, when we like really broke the gold standard, you'll notice that while wages and the average real income and the GDP, and then also the earnings of like the top 5% and top 1% actually were increasing at the same rate, and then it broke in 1971, and that is really where everything went on steroids, where we did not have the savings to meet our debt and the real capital to back all of our industry. We were funneling fake money and stealing real value towards projects that were not paying us back. And we got to paper over it so strongly. The reason we were able to essentially cover this up for as long as we have is because we have the dollar reserve current. Like, the dollar is the reserve currency. So basically, we're able to export our paper in exchange for real goods. So we actually become, that's how we became almost like just a heavy consumer economy. And we're just buying up all of the goods from like China and like external to our country. We're importing everything. And at the exact same time, our production shuts down. We stop producing because the inflated asset and dollar prices make it appear as if they're not actually economically productive enough. So we export our paper currency instead to places like China and India and these other countries, and they build the manufacturing. They produce the real value. And you see this huge shift from like the 40s, 50s, 60s, where we were a heavy, heavy production economy. We had an incredibly strong productive foundation to one where it's all consumerism, it's all debt, it's all financing. And none of that has a strong foundation. All the value in production that we do have has been leveraged multiple times. And it's just crazy what's happened just in the last couple of weeks, like the things that they've announced, and like they literally are taking it as far as it can go. They just cut interest rates again to zero. It's 0% to 0.25%. That is the Fed funds rate. And this is after they had like a slash of 0.25%. Just like a week ago, like we were up in like 2-point-something%, and we've just dropped to zero in almost no time. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean for the interest rate to be 0%? It means that in a country that is incredibly over-leveraged, in an economy that has nothing but debt, and we are desperate to find real resources, that's why the price is trying to crash. Because we're trying to figure out how many real resources actually exist underneath all of this garbage. In that environment, the Fed is pushing the market to a zero, is presenting a 0% interest that would indicate that we have so much extra capital, we have so much extra productivity and so much surplus that people would loan it out for free. That's what a normal 0% interest rate would indicate, that we are so unbelievably wealthy that I would lend money out. I would lend massive amounts of capital for no cost whatsoever. It's like saying that I have so many cars in my driveway that if one of my neighbors needs to borrow one, totally fine. I don't even need a fee. I'm never going to need the car because I've got 30 other cars ready and waiting. Is that the state that we're in? We have just all this surplus and all this productivity? Or is it that we are all leveraged to the end of the earth and just 2 weeks of not being at work is shaking the foundations of everything that we have because we have no surplus? And for 2 weeks, just for losing 2 weeks of productivity, we might not even be able to make it to the next check, to the next interest payment on the debts that we have. That's how you force an economy into tens of trillions of dollars in insolvency. That's how you fake an entire economy. You trick an entire economy to destroy itself. You go to its very foundation and you lie about what's there. That's what's happening when they manipulate interest rates. And I talked about this in the coronavirus Bitcoin Fixes This episode, but that Corona is, and Caitlin, actually, if you haven't listened to the Pompliano episode, really good. She really kind of expands on a lot of these concepts and tries to explain some of the stuff that she's talking about. It's a really good discussion. I highly recommend it. But she says the same thing, and this is something that a lot of people are trying to get across, particularly in the Bitcoin space. But that coronavirus is not what has caused this financial collapse. The virus itself would not destroy the economy. Just in a general sense, if we were losing a month's worth of productivity, but we had on net a month's worth of savings, a month of surplus, we'd be fine. Like things would correct, and that extra capital would allocate to exactly where there was not enough capital. Like you would just shift. It's like water coming from the high side of the aquarium to the low side of the aquarium. It all balances out at the end. But because instead of a month's surplus, instead of any extra productivity, we've been lied to and we've been destroying, we've been running negative for years, for decades. The second we can't keep up the facade of the nominal value going up, the whole thing comes crashing down. The coronavirus is not the cause of the economic crisis. It's the pin that popped the bubble. It's just the messenger. Our problem, our economic disaster, as Caitlin explains so well in this thread, has been building for 50 years. When the Fed announced the recent rate drop from 1 to 1.25% all the way down to 0 to 0.25, it also said in its statement, quote, they are prepared to use their full range of tools to support the flow of credit to households and businesses and thereby promote its maximum employment and price stability goals. They are going to use every money printing and price control tool in their in their toolbox to make sure that all the nominal prices look golden as we set all of our productivity and value on fire. It's so crazy to think from the framing when you understand like what's really going on is that it's like saying they're trying to manipulate the prices of all goods to make it appear as if we're buying the same amount when it's just disappearing off the shelves. Caitlin had a really good analogy in the Pompliano episode where she said we've been trained to look at only the numerator for ages, like to try to judge the increase in the GDP and like everything, all of our productivity and how much value there is. We've only looked at the numerator while they have been constantly manipulating the denominator, which makes the fraction worthless. The numerator doesn't mean jack if you don't know what the denominator is. And that's how we've been led to believe. We're just, not allowed to look below the line. And that's where they've scammed us. Like we've essentially been, trillions of dollars have been confiscated into industries and into derivatives and markets that have just destroyed it. And it's really easy to be like, oh, evil 1%. But I think it's mostly just this giant conspiracy of ignorance. Like the market can't do anything. Like the market is going to respond to the perceived market signals. You know, like everybody who started speculating on houses and started flipping houses, like friends that I knew became real estate agents when they had no interest before. I knew a couple that did nothing for, 5 or 6 years, but flip houses. They just go in, remodel, and then sell it. Like they weren't stealing. That's what was essentially happening is the industry was soaking up value and basically having a perceived nominal increase in productivity, but real value is actually being destroyed because we just massively overinflated the entire industry. But, it's not their fault, essentially, that this happened. They're just responding to market signals. When you manipulate the rules of the game, you can't get mad at them for playing the new game based on the new rules. That's what markets are really good at doing, actually, is taking advantage and correcting price signals if they're actually telling us the truth. And that's why she talks about in the episode as well, the Depression of 1920, and how there was, and actually this, actually a decent example for the crash of 1929 that she doesn't actually go into. But it's a very similar situation to 1920, is that in 1920, the reason nobody knows about the Depression of 1920 is because it was recovered in a year, because the administration and government at the time did nothing. She actually said that Hoover, who was not president, but I can't remember the role, but he was actually overridden by the president at the time to prevent the government from going into like stimulus plans and bailing out and all that good stuff, and instead paid off a third of the government debt. And what happened? The market rushed to reallocate everything to the proper place. I think the numbers were, she said, it started at, they had 2% unemployment, and then it shot up to 12%, and then by the end of the first year through the first, adjustment period, it was back down to 6%. And then another year following that, it was back down to 2%. Like, markets are incredibly agile and mobile to balance out when prices are telling them the truth. And that's what we need. We need interest rates to shoot up so that we actually figure out, we actually correct the imbalance to how much real value is actually out there versus how much has been promised and pretended existed. But in 1929, actually, you had a similar situation. There was actually, in the first like 6 to 9 months, there was almost a full recovery, but things were still essentially hurting. Like the pressure was still being felt, but the recovery was in full swing. And this is essentially how long it took for them to really get their programs and their bailouts off the ground. And then they started into it and things started back into a decline. We were actually getting the balance sheets consolidated. They were actually getting their debts sorted out. And just like we did in 2008, we actually lowered the total debt. For the first time in ages, the economy was actually living within its means for a short span of time before they lowered interest rates again and dumped all this, all the new debt on us and manipulated the prices again so that now we didn't know what it meant. We didn't know, we had none of those pressures in order to force us to live within our means. And we went right back to consuming and right back to destroying value and right back to, going deeper and deeper into debt, which again, just pushed us to 2020. And here we are, Corona comes around and slaps us in the face. And suddenly we find out that, oh, we've been doing the same stupid crap for the same stupid reason again for another decade. But I don't want to be, I don't want to be all doom and gloom about it either. Like there is a lot to correct, but you know, as I said, and Caitlin pointed out as well, markets correct really quickly if you leave them be, if they can get real pricing. That's another really important part about Bitcoin, is that no matter what sort of leveraging and stuff that happens in our ecosystem, it's incredibly short-lived before we find real prices again. So we have the potential to... Bitcoin is the systemic solution to that problem. Now, it's not big enough yet to hold the whole thing. Like that foundation still needs to be much stronger. We still got a lot of work to do and tons of building to do. But this is an opportunity. This is a huge opportunity. As much as there will be pain and stress and loss, there will be unbelievable gains and unbelievable opportunity if you look at what's real and act accordingly. Find real production, find real assets, and find those things that are growing and producing real value. This is going to move mountains of wealth. This is going to be a huge wealth reallocation, and it is going to move from the weak, hands, and from unproductive projects and destructive projects into productive ones and into strong hands. And I'm going to be checking out, she mentioned Doug Noland a couple of times, both in the, well, she mentioned it once in the thread, but she also mentioned a couple of times in Pompliano's show. So I'm going to check that out, and I'll actually drop the link to that as well. And also in the thread, she released the, or linked to the federalreserve.gov releases on, what is it exactly? It's like a, financial accounts of the United States, flows of funds, balance sheets, and integrated macroeconomic accounts. Really, I mean, it's a quarterly breakdown and it's really long, but there's a lot of actually like really useful stuff in here if you kind of want to see and you know what you're looking at in digging into these things. I'll probably be hanging onto this as a resource later on. But I'll link to Doug Noland as well, which I do not personally know, but I'm going to be digging into now, and I appreciate her mentioning that because I always love another good resource for financial analysis and stuff, because I don't have the time to keep up with this as much as I would like. I'm, you know, usually so much drowning in everything Bitcoin and Lightning and all of that stuff. Everybody's got limited time. Time is the one resource that is ultimately scarce outside of Bitcoin. So with that, I think I said everything I want to say. Just an awesome thread. A huge thank you to Caitlin Long for, well, not only the thread, but everything she is doing. I got to say, if you guys are not following her, I don't know what they, who she knows over there in Wyoming, but they are making shit happen. And if everybody's not careful, Wyoming is going to be the financial capital of the world in short order because of Caitlin Long and a couple of other people. So definitely one to follow. Definitely really important to keep a close eye on Avanti Banker, Avanti Financial. Let me actually look it up so that I'm not telling you wrong. Avanti Bank and Trust. Okay, it's Avanti, A-V-A-N-T-I-B-T. That's the Twitter tag. So definitely check that one out. It's going to be really exciting to see the regulatory atmosphere and basically the welcoming atmosphere in Wyoming that they've kind of set the stage for, to see what kind of financial services and what kind of powerhouses in the new economy and this new ecosystem actually come out of that environment. So, you know, fingers crossed, we're going to have some amazing things there. But yeah, I will have tags and links to all of that good stuff in the show notes and in the Twitter post. Thank you guys for listening. Do not forget to check out swanbitcoin.com, the easiest way to buy regularly into Bitcoin and, you know, stack your savings in sound money. Swanbitcoin.com sponsoring the show. Could not be happier about these guys supporting real Bitcoiners, and I love it. Thank you all so much for listening. This is the Crypto Economy, and I will catch you all next time. Guy Swan is out. Take it easy, everybody.